The virus broke swiftly in the Pacific Northwest. Few dared to chronicle the personal and biological consequences, and many tried to pass it off as mere fiction. But there was one man named Charles Burns who spent a good portion of his life dwelling extensively on this subject. He knew the comic book was the only acceptable medium to convey this information, which every American must know. Whether his work is real or fictive, well, who can say?
Okay, so I am here with Charles Burns, who is the writer and illustrator of Black Hole. Charles, how are you doing?
Good.
First off, you've probably seen Vanessa Rainey's really lengthy critical essay of Black Hole, where she analyzes your panels quite in depth. And I actually wanted to ask you a comparison she made. She pointed out that Keith, Chris, and Eliza actually represent the same relationship structure as Jean-Paul Sartre's No Exit. Now, I wanted to actually ask you about this. Was Sartre ever on the mind in concocting this narrative, or how did the relationship structure begin?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't know that I've read the essay that you're referring to, but there have been some questions asked along those lines before. I think mine, it really wasn't an influence, or really wasn't, that wasn't in my mind when I was creating the story. You have that, I guess I was trying to create these characters, two very different types of women, and the main character is just coming to terms with the differences between them and his attraction to them. His initial attraction to Chris, a girl that he admires from his biology class, is this very kind of clean-cut, what he thinks is very clean-cut and the kind of woman that he's putting on a pedestal. She's perfect in his mind, but he doesn't really know anything about her at all in reality, other than just that she seems amazing. And then he meets a very different kind of woman who's very much earthy, much more sexual, and he finds himself attracted to her, much to his dismay. So the story is really about his coming to terms with his reaction, I guess, to these two different women.
But no Jean-Paul Sartre.
No, I'm
any
afraid,
literary.
No, I would love to be able to say that yes, there's this, you know, a good comparison there, but no, that wasn't the case.
Okay. I also wanted to ask you about some of the anatomical close-ups throughout Black Hole. They remind me very much, in addition to the pustules and the various biological impediments that many of the characters have, reminds me very much of a sort of World War II venereal disease film. I was wondering if what kind of visual references did you use for these particular decisions, or was it just a matter of more of an intuitive choice?
It was probably a more intuitive choice. I mean, there's those things that I grew up with that are out there. I think there's references in the movie to sitting in a biology health class and looking at learning about sexuality that way, which was always this very kind of very strangely antiseptic situation. I remember one time in biology class, there was a TA, but she was a student teacher, and we were having some film on, I don't know, on reproduction, and she showed the first half of it. And then she abruptly turned the film off. And of course, everybody in the class said, "Oh, you know, keep running it. Oh, you know, we want to see see the rest of it." And then she was saying, "No, no, no, no." And finally, she turned it back on. And there was this very graphic portion of the movie where we were seeing an IUD inserted into a vaginal vagina.
Yeah.
It was, and everybody just immediately got very, very quiet and very, very uncomfortable, because here is this, suddenly after seeing these kind of typical movies about your growing body, suddenly we were seeing this very kind of graphic representation. So it was a odd moment.
Is it something about that period between, say, 1945 and 1975? Was that kind of very much on the mind in terms of getting this particular look or this particular emphasis on close-ups and warts and the like?
No, I don't know. I guess that's a more of a personal thing. I guess that's just how my brain works or thinks. I mean, those are the kinds of images that were coming up. Again, it has to do with all the things that you're subjected to and you come across as from that time period, but nothing as kind of thought out as as that, no.
So really it's more of a sort of intuitive personal experience that you're drawing upon here?
That would be a better description. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because this leads me into another question. I know that the yearbook photos, or rather the photos in the inside covers, were taken from your own yearbooks.
Yeah.
And this leads me to ask you about how much of what is in Black Hole is taken from your personal experience, and where did you imagine certain details? I mean, certainly the disease which plagues all these various people is imagined in some sense, but I'm wondering, in terms of the more sort of personal observations, were these taken more from anecdotes? Were these imagined? What level did you feel the need to draw upon real life and your own sort of instinct for reimagining behavioral scenarios?
I mean, my situation was, I mean, when I was growing up, it was a much more benign situation than what I'm depicting. I mean, there were kind of internal struggles that I was going through, that I think everybody goes through during adolescence, that that seemed extremely dramatic and extremely just, you know, heart-rending, difficult times. And I guess I was trying to depict what those feelings were, that kind of internal struggle that I was going through. There are certainly situations in the story that are drawn directly from my life. I never met a girl, you know, a half-naked girl with a tail. I would have loved to, but, you know, maybe...
Wouldn't we all, really?
Yeah, but that never happened. My existence was much more, sedate and pedestrian, I suppose. But again, these sorts of things were brewing in my mind. My sense of not fitting in, my sense of this kind of internal horror that I was feeling in a lot of situations, whether they were, anyway.
Well, I mean, in terms of experience versus what you observed, I mean, it seems to me that personal experience seems more of the motivating impetus for what you put into Black Hole more than anything else, if what I'm understanding you to say is correct. And I'm wondering, were you more of an observer growing up, that you saw these types of people, or were you actually one of those types?
One of those types of people in varying degrees. Yeah, so, it's like someone was asking me the other day, were you a punk? I was there in all those concerts participating, but I was, I never shaved my head or, carved a swastika on my forehead. I was there. I guess that's what I wanted to do too, is in the book talk or just have a kind of a realistic look at the kind of times that I was going in at the, up in that time. There's moments in there where even though they're pretty sedate, they were very horrific to me, to be sitting in a room for, 4 hours listening to Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, get played over and over and over again, sitting around with a bunch of guys for hours and hours. It was horrific to me.
I want to sort of touch upon how this personal experience relates into how people view your book, which is very much sort of described as this allegory of sexuality in the United States. But it seems to me very interesting because people want to actually apply the American appellation to your book as opposed to sort of look upon it as a sort of depiction of real life. Do you think this is representative of them wanting to look at Black Hole as a kind of great American novel? Or is there something about personal experience conveyed in American comics that really kind of calls for this?
My intention was just to write a personal story. It was not to make some overall comment about America. I mean, that certainly comes into it. My opinions about American culture, that's what I lived through, and that's what I can talk about with authority. But I'm not making I'm not answering questions. I'm putting questions out there. I have had people say, well, this is about American sexuality, American youths in, youth culture in the early 70s. It's set in the 70s because I can speak with authority about that specific part of my life, that time period of my life when I was going through that. So, yeah, it's more about that, I think. Not trying to sell it short, but...
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering also about you as an author in terms of drawing and in terms of writing the text and the like. Did you sort of have to take any steps to not judge these particular characters in the sense of What steps did you take to sort of ensure that these characters could come to life without your judgment? Or did you, in fact, judge these characters? I mean, certainly the way that you draw a nose or whatnot is going to sort of determine how a character is perceived.
Sure. I think in earlier stories of mine, I did really rely much more on very, very clear-cut stereotypes. And my stories really relied on I don't know, the content, they were content driven as opposed to character driven. And in this, when I started Black Hole, I really wanted to do my best to focus on the characters and to let them come alive and let them be themselves and not be perfect and not, you know, there's moments where, you know, this character you've thought is like a pretty good guy is acting like kind of a, you know, a pretty creepy guy, and it's very transparent. Even though he is voicing these very, you know, these lofty ideals, he's actually acting in a way that's not all that great. So, you know, I want the characters to be, you know, to have, you know, to not just be stereotypes. So that was my intention anyway.
Interesting. Did you take any sort of steps in terms of giving them things that were sort of against your ethical judgment, or did morals not enter the question at all?
I wasn't trying to be judgmental. I mean, I guess, for example, the drug use. That was just part of the landscape when I was growing up. There was something that was accepted by the time, you know, I was that age in the 70s. Like the drug revolution and the sexual revolution had kind of come and gone, and this was like the aftermath. The wave had kind of crashed, and we were, you know, that was part of the world at that point. And where we were struggling with, you know, we're still struggling with identity and everything else that anyone goes through, but there was still, you know, that was just, it was part of the landscape at that point.
Many have remarked upon the consistency of how 10 years of work essentially looking the same, but instead of sort of throwing this question at you again, I actually wanted to sort of ask you, because you saw your daughters grow up during the course of writing this thing.
Right.
You probably changed as a person, and I'm wondering if during the latter issues of Black Hole, you found it more difficult to go back to sort of the initial being of who you were to sort of maintain that particular tone. Did you take any sort of steps to keep things narratively consistent? Did you find it more of a struggle that, like, oh, well, you know, my earlier self thought this, and now I have to kind of carry this through to the end?
For some reason, that never really was an issue. I the entire book, I had taken a lot of notes and really thought through the structure of it. For example, there's portions that, you know, in the first couple of chapters, there's narrative threads that don't get resolved until much later. So I had to kind of keep track of all those things. On the other hand, yeah, of course, I've had people say, well, you know, your daughters were teenagers. Were you looking at them and thinking about their teen years? And the answer is, you know, almost like this horrified no, not at all. I mean, I could see things reflected in their lives and what they were going through, but it really was, it was always digging deep into my own past and myself. And trying to be as honest as I could, possibly could, and that's, you know, that was my, that's how I worked.
The spirit of youth continued to become.
Yeah, I
natural,
tried to. Yeah, I tried my best. There was not a matter of just kind of like losing sight of what I was after, during the course of it.
There's a number of curious artistic things I want to ask you about, and that is, for example, noses. I remarked on them earlier. All of your noses seem to have this very specific kind of curve to them, which I was curious about how you developed that, and also the sort of the revealing nature of the eyes, as well as the fact that many of the characters seem to kind of keep their heads down. And so I kind of wanted to ask you about this.
Well, I think if you look at a lot of cartoonists' work, you'll see that the way they draw human beings is based on their body types and their gestures and their, I mean, I've seen cartoonists walk in the room that I know that this cartoonist is supposed to arrive, but I've never met them before, and then I can recognize them from their drawings. It has a lot, you know, so my, you know, the noses you're talking about, you're probably looking at a version of that now, because, you know, you look at yourself in the mirror, you think about, you know, what the structure of that nose is. I find myself in a, you know, struggling with that sometimes, in that I do have this kind of consistent way of drawing characters, and I try to pull myself out of that and look very carefully But I tend to use this very kind of standardized way of drawing ears and noses and chins and.
But it seems to fit in, particularly with, like, your Believer work, you know?
Yeah. Well, in the Believer work, and that's different in the sense that I'm looking directly at a photograph. It's really just kind of using that kind of source material. And that's actually really interesting for me because I am looking at very different, racial backgrounds, age differences, all kinds of things like that. So that there you've got that direct reference, and I'm looking at that very carefully. But when I'm imagining something in my head, there is a certain kind of body type and certain characteristics that.
I know for Fun Home, Alison Bechtel took photographs of herself so she can actually get the gestures right. Many of the various people. Have you done anything like that to improve?
The only time, there was a few, generally I didn't use any photo references except for things like, trying to figure out what a car looks like, a 72 Buick Skylark or something like that, or finding out what zigzag rolling papers looked like in 1971 or something. Occasionally there were situations where there was a very specific pose of the characters that I wanted to do from an odd angle, for example, that I did take some photographs for, but generally speaking, I stayed with my lack of abilities of drawing.
I don't know about that, but I mean, actually, it's interesting you bring up angles because there are actually a lot of Dutch angles throughout Black Hole.
Most of the way that I think about when I'm staging the characters it looks very staged, very frontal, straightforward, not always eye level, but close to eye level. So every once in a while, there would be a situation where there's some extreme foreshortening, you're looking down on characters or things like that. So, I struggle with that, and I struggle with perspective sometimes. If you're doing a big room, it'll take me hours and hours to try to figure out what looks like a normal perspective. Generally speaking, I would just construct the characters with no reference.
Uh-huh. Does black help you out? Because a lot of the blackness throughout the book is filled in by white lines. For example, the silhouette of a house. And also a lot of interiors are done this way throughout. Does this kind of help you get at that interior, or is this a way of... Do you fear the white expanse, or what's the deal?
Well, no, I mean, I think I've kind of, my work slowly changed over the years. I mean, I used to use, the little dot patterns to show gray, and I used to use lines to show, like, a middle tone, a middle value. But I slowly kind of reduced everything to pure black and pure white. And, of course, there's techniques you can use to have silhouettes and simplify things. You don't need, all this detail all the time to move the story ahead. There's moments when I really like all the textures that come out in the woods, for example. You're seeing the bark on the tree and the dirt on the ground, and it really lends this whole kind of overall feeling of the atmosphere it almost takes on a character of its own. It's a look that I've always enjoyed, that kind of darkness and those kinds of, that kind of line quality. So that's what I've, towards.
I'm wondering if noir was an influence on you, or Aubrey Beardsley to some degree, because there's a certain kind, there's actually one cinematographer, and the name escapes me, but he shoots all of his films using one light, and one light illuminates the source, and I get a similar sense with much of the blackness in Black Hole.
Well, it's a look that I'm certainly attracted to. There's a kind of a drama to that look. I was putting together a slideshow today because I'm going to show slides this evening, and I was taking some shots off my computer of some stills from The Outer Limits, which was this show that I grew up with in the early 60s.
First season in particular, shot by the cinematographer who I'm blanking out, the guy who did American Beauty, died a couple years ago. Beautiful cinematography.
Yeah, there's a mixture in there, but there is this very, very strong dramatic sort of light that I, obviously looked at when I was at an impressionable age. Yeah. I certainly like that look. You were talking about a single light source. Recently, the last couple of years, I've been working on an animated movie, and the technique we were using was using 3D characters, 3D digital imaging. And one thing that's it's a normal thing to do is you figure out your light source. And the way that I, if you have a consistent light source, when we were trying to figure out how these characters are going to be lit in my animated comic, it's like it's not a real light source. I mean, you don't have this glowing light. It's really used for a dramatic effect in the story. In one setting, the lighting can change throughout each, each panel can change. And it's really used for that kind of effect, this very dramatic effect.
Paneling, likewise, is fairly traditional in this. You often have a lot of 3x2 pages. I'm wondering if you had tried to have more unusual paneling, that it just didn't work for you. And I also wanted to
say that it's actually much less conservative than I have done in the past. If you look through, there are configurations that are not traditional at all.
Yeah.
I think a lot of there's portions of the story where I want to have a pace in a very consistent sort of way that are traditional. But then there's breaks that I take from that are, for example, going out. There's a moment when the two characters go out to the ocean and things lighten up briefly.
Yeah.
One of two parts of the story where everything kind of, you have a little sunlight. And for that, I did every single panel was this very long horizontal panels, because just to have the sense of the horizon and this kind of openness of the characters are out in
Panavision. Open.
Oh yeah, exactly. Well, they're not in this kind of claustrophobic woods, or inside some house where it's dark and windows are closed and everything else. So yeah, I tried to kind of play with how the panels were put together to move the story ahead.
The other question I had in relation to paneling is the split head thing you're fond of doing, where you often have two characters, the halves of each head.
Sure.
Did that sort of enter the equation? I mean, obviously you use the squiggly lines for flashbacks,
right,
but there's also something striking about those squiggly lines being used to bifurcate.
Right. There's just a visual effect. I mean, it makes you feel a certain way when you're looking at that kind of surface and that kind of line. So yeah, I use that for the flashbacks, this kind of wiggly line. There's a lot of things where I was like kind of cutting the characters and putting them together. I don't know what else.
Well, I'm just curious how it came about. Did you do a lot of drawings early on where you were splitting heads in two like this, or?
Not really. I think I was just thinking about having these characters. In a lot of ways, there's not that much difference between men and women, male and female characters. This was the first time I did a narrative of using a female character and doing the first person narrative with her, and I felt comfortable doing that. And I think there was the idea of kind of like melding these two heads. It was almost like this literal way of showing, of putting them together. They're showing that they're connected, that their brains are more similar than one would think.
Yeah, got you. I also wanted to ask you about the static nature of some of the panels. For example, with Keith and Eliza, their courtship is often handled where either they're in the same position over the course of multiple frames,
mm-hmm,
or one of them is sort of stuck in that particular position over the course of many, many panels. And I wanted to ask you about this, because often this happens in conjunction when text enters the equation. I was wondering if you felt the need to sort of slow down the narrative this way so that you can have, was this sort of a service to the reader, or what was...
Boy, without looking at something specifically, it would be difficult to answer. I mean, everything was very thought out, believe me.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
So, there's moments. There's actually not that much kind of physical action shown. I'm not that kind of artist where I really show people running, jumping in extreme situations. That may just be my limitations as an artist or a storyteller, but there's certainly... Yeah,
here's an example right here. Like these three panels we see at the very bottom edge.
Sure.
We have this static thing while other narrative happens along
right
with the text. So I'm kind of something along those lines is what I see throughout, particularly in relation to Keith and Eliza.
Oh, sure. Well, in this case, he's fantasizing. So you're seeing him in this very static situation where there's a lot of things changing, moving around him. So yeah, it is that moment of almost meditative sort of moment where he's reflecting and focused in.
This too struck me too, when you have Eliza on the bed like this,
mm-hmm.
and she's in the exact same position
over the course
of two frames. So is it really just a matter of just thinking?
It has a lot to do with how your brain thinks. And I was grouping panels in certain ways. When you have two panels right next to each other, you're always comparing them back and forth. So I mean, there's just certain things it functions that way, where you have that kind of comparison. If you've got a series of three images, it shows movement more readily. A large panel will slow things down. So it's trying to figure out the rhythms of the story to slow things down, to focus in, to let things kind of meander sometimes, all those things.
Well, the relationship between the text and the image, is text a sort of factor in planning out these panels or what?
It all fits in together. It's all it's all worked out together. When it's good, I mean, when it works well, it should be seamless. You should be experiencing the story and not thinking about, in a technical sense. I mean, I've certainly gone to movies and paid attention to what the director is doing, tried to look very carefully to see how this effect is achieved. On the other hand, if you're watching a good movie, you're not conscious of those effects. You're immersed in the movie. So that was the same thing I was trying to do is again, like, just use different configurations to tell the story. That was
also the text box and dialogue occurring at the same time. In fact, it reminds me very much of how The Age of Innocence was structured, that movie, because Scorsese often has some narration while they're having this overlapping dialogue like that.
Where you have something that's going on in the narrative and
all kinds of information.
Very, very
plus
different.
You have like a sumptuous visual image, and it was very much like that. And I'm wondering this level of causing the reader to pay attention to three essential elements here. How did this kind of come about? Did you just want to keep...
Well, the fact that you have... It's a hard thing to pull off in other... It's something you can do in comics pretty well, where you can have this internal dialogue, you can have a narrative, and you can have action taking place at the same time, and you can look back and forth on the pages to... For example, when I was designing all the chapters, designing the pages, I was always thinking in terms of the two facing pages. And if you look throughout the book, it's consistent where it's really thought of as this complete unit because you turn the page. But you also anticipate the fact that a reader is, even if you're supposed to read from right to left, your eye is jumping around. You're looking forward, you're going back. You can compare, what you've seen over here and jump back. Mm-hmm. So... It's just trying to control that sort of pace and control what the reader's looking at, how they're experiencing it.
Comics writer Douglas Wolk said something very interesting about your work. He described your work, even when he does smoke or falling detritus, nothing in these images ever seems to be moving. I'm wondering if you agree with this, or your kinetic motion is something that you don't really want to capture. You want it to be sort of still image.
It's probably a little of both. I mean, it has to do with just how you see the world, how you draw the world. There's artists that I admire that, like I was saying, I have my inability to draw perspective, my inability to draw cars. There's certain things, but that's not my interest, obviously. There's artists I admire that just, freehand draw kind of beautiful cityscapes and just amazing structures, and I'm in awe of that. But it's obvious, if I really wanted to, I would have pursued that. That's something that I would have, I would have stayed home and drawn cars all day. But that's not what I did. So it's a little bit of both. It's like maybe my limitations, but it's also my, the way I see the world. It is this very kind of static and this kind of frozen moment that I'm interested in. I don't know, the few times that, if you look through the book, the few times that I have to draw someone walking like a full body, it looks kind of weirdly clumsy because I don't have those skills.
But one might also argue that these limitations create a very specific mood, and creates a mood.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, there's no question about that. I am what I am. That's all I am. No, of course, that's what my work's about. It's...
At the risk of making this sound like some sort of yearly review meeting, what are your strengths? Would you say?
God, you know, I don't think about it in those terms. What are my strengths? I don't know. It's
faces, perhaps, or
organic things.
So life is really the way for you to latch upon to an image with you.
It doesn't look lifelike for the most part, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to answer that. What can I say?
I was curious if the 1954 Comics Code was an inspiration for this, because there's a certain kind of EC-like feel, and there's also a certain sensuality to this work that is rather striking, but also very much rooted in that we must stub this kind of stuff out at the bub during 1954.
Well, there's a certain, I said before, there's a certain look that I admire in comics like that you're mentioning, so that finds its way into my work. Was it a direct inspiration? No, it wasn't something that I was thinking about. Is it something that's, you know, I grew up with, and these things are, you know, manifest themselves in the work? You know, probably they filter up and find their way into the work, but it was not a, you know, conscious decision or anything like that.
The editor at your college newspaper was a certain creator of a television series, and I was wondering, when did you feel the sort of bug to be a cartoonist, or did that kind of push you in that direction? Also, Linda Berry went to school with you as well, so I'm curious about that.
Well, I moved around a lot when I was a kid, and I was, and for whatever reason, whether it was to entertain myself or to, I don't know, I always read, you know, I always looked at a lot of books to entertain myself, looked at a lot of comics, I drew a lot to entertain myself, and also drew to kind of save myself from getting my ass kicked when I went to a new school, you know, draw some monster for the tough kid of the school. So I from very, very early on, I think I saw myself as that this is one skill that I was pretty good at. I could look around and see that, you know, the other kids were just scribbling and I was doing the real thing. So I had some sense of, you know, of myself as an artist from very early on. It was what I was interested in, and it was what I seemed to be pretty good at. And by the time I was in college, I was doing a lot of different things. I really didn't know what the possibilities were. I was taking fine art classes and photo classes, all kinds of things. But by the time I was in college and met Matt Groening and Linda Berry, I was doing comics for the school paper, the weekly paper, and they were very traditional sort of comics. They were like some of the things you were describing, looking at older, you know, comics from the 40s and 50s, having that as an inspiration, kind of twisting those ideas around. And I didn't really, I think I my thought was that Linda Berry and Matt Groening were really kind of amazing, you know, very funny writers. But I never really, you know, I would occasionally see like a very little doodle that Matt would do, for example. And Linda did her very kind of minimalist drawings that she did for her comics. But at that time anyway, I didn't really consider them cartoonists per se. Much more as writers, talented writers. And I remember being surprised later on seeing Matt Groening's Life in Hell, and then Linda Berry started a comic strip shortly after graduating. And I was thinking, why the hell did she get into that paper? I'm the cartoonist, you know. It was, of course, she should have been in the paper, but that was just my, I was not taking care of my business, so.
Well, this brings up an interesting distinction, because I know that a few comics people I've talked to have said that, well, I was an okay artist and I was an okay writer, but together I kind of found my voice. Was this the case with you?
I think it really varies with, you know, from artist to artist. I think there's some cartoonists that really come in from the writing side, and others that come in from the art side. And I certainly, you know, was always interested in narrative, and it was always playing with stories, but my strengths initially were the artwork. And it was really a matter of kind of teaching myself how to do comics, to write comics well, and looking very carefully at people who I admired, and really seeing how they pulled it off. And And also had to do with like eventually meeting other cartoonists, working cartoonists, and having feedback from them as well. Mm. So all those things.
I mean, in what sense does the art drive the words and the words drive the art, or is it just one big sort of magical
formula? If it's at its best, it works together perfectly. I mean, not perfectly, but I mean, those two are create a unique whole, a unique different thing. You can't take one away from the other. Mm-hmm. There's certainly artists, there's certainly comics I've seen that I think like, wow, this is beautiful looking, but the I'm not interested in the story. I'll be interested to sit down and look at it, but I'm not interested in the story per se. And there's other cartoonists who have very, very minimal, very, very simplified drawing style, and the story is amazing and pulls you in, and it works. So you really have to have the writing. If you don't have the writing, then you're doomed. But yeah.
Well, in light of
hopefully you put the two things together, you can and really create something that's strong.
In light of the writing, were there any narrative structures you looked to in terms of like, well, that is the kind of narrative that I want to do for Black Hole?
No. No, there wasn't anything specific that I was looking at. It was much more about what I was trying to achieve with the characters and with the story itself. I mean, I mean, obviously nothing, you know, there's nothing comes, I didn't invent a whole new style of storytelling at all. But on the other hand, I was not looking, directly at any particular source for inspiration.
You alluded earlier to having a structure very much in place at the beginning that you stuck to. Was there any elements of the narrative that changed over time? Did the virus shift over time?
There were some things that changed. There's a few elements that changed that I got rid of, or I mean, generally it was a situation where I had kind of an overall plan, and let's say, you know, I would have two chapters put into one, or one, you know, I would change things like that. I would find different and better ways of telling the story than I had initially conceived of. And there were a few things where I realized that even though I'd been taking notes on something for years and years and years, I suddenly realized, well, this is not really, we don't really need this part in the story. So I excised certain things. Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to ask you about the nature of food in this. KFC, sandwiches, lots of sandwiches. Lots of comfort food, as a matter of fact. And I wanted to ask you, why was the food so simple? Was it a matter of drawing and remembering from personal experience?
For me, I just think it was... I mean, I always wanted to have something that would be very, very specific. For someone to say, you know, to be standing in the kitchen and saying, you know, these sandwiches are amazing. It's bologna, Miracle Whip, lettuce, and white bread. Here, you've got to have one. I mean, for me, I find that funny and intriguing. I've actually served those at parties occasionally, but usually they don't get eaten up too quickly. But I don't know, I guess in a lot of cases, I wanted to have very specific things like Kentucky Fried Chicken. Like, what is that? Like, think about, you know, coming the idea of these kids out in the woods, and here they are in this very kind of tough situation. And they're bringing this kind of really ridiculous commercial, you know, chicken into this situation. It just, for me, it's kind of importing this commercial outside world into this very horrific situation. I don't know. I just like those kinds of that kind of imagery.
The nature of this outside world in the woods tends to sort of announce itself more and more over the course of Black Hole. Did you feel, as you were writing this, that you needed to explore that nature of misfits in the woods more so than the...
Well, things get revealed as the story progresses. You know, you get hint, there's a hint at the very first chapter, or the second chapter maybe, of there's other kids out in the woods, and there's kind of mysterious figures around the periphery. And then it's finding out details. Eventually you have Chris, goes out and sets up a camp out in the middle of these woods with her boyfriend. It's finding out what these characters are experiencing and what they're coming across.
If it's all about the details and you've planned this all out in advance, what room do you leave for narrative ambiguities?
I think there's plenty of ambiguity. There was I mean, one thing I never did was kind of spell things out or offer very very clear cut final solutions. In a lot of cases, it was more being an observer. Very specific situations that would come up, but there was not this. I mean, you were asking me before about moral considerations. Was I trying to tell some morality tale? No, it wasn't the case at all. It was really just exploring the lives of these characters.
When did you have the sense that this was more of a sort of Rorschach test for the reader? Because it seems to me that many people seem to bring their own particular interpretations to what this is about. And
well, that's the way it should be. Like I said, it puts these images together but doesn't come up with a specific answer, a solution. I think when I'm working, I'm working in this commercial medium, but I'm not thinking of an audience per se. I'm really just trying to tell the story. There's no audience in the back of my head that's looking over my shoulder when I'm working. Like I said, it's a commercial medium, and you anticipate, having readers, but I wasn't thinking about it in terms of manipulating readers in a certain way. I don't know.
It may be a commercial medium, but I mean, simultaneously, this is something that, if you look at it over the course of time, you're going ahead and pumping out 12 issues over 10 years. That's hardly a commercial enterprise.
Yeah, no, not at all. Exactly. I mean, like I said, I mean, I would have done it in one form or another, whether it was like Xeroxing copies up for my friends or something. I don't know, but no, it wasn't. It certainly was. It was never conceived of as this commercial endeavor. I wasn't thinking about an age group or who my readers were or who I was going to appeal to or anything like that.
And here you are talking about it after the fourth incarnation or whatnot of this particular
right.
printing. I mean, are you bothered by the notion of comics as a commercial medium, or that Black Hole continues to be sort of dredged up and will possibly be dredged up as in many incarnations as like V for Vendetta to keep that in print?
No, I think that's good to keep, if it's a good story, keeping things in print, it's good. What was that question again? Before we talk about...
More about the idea of comics as a commercial medium, specifically.
I mean, I've never made a huge amount of money off my comics. I've never approached it as this commercial endeavor. Like I said, it's much more of a personal artwork for me. I do my commercial illustration and editorial illustration, and that's what pays the bills. But I guess that does allow me to take my time. And to not censor myself in any way. I mean, especially with Black Hole, I really wanted to tell a story that where I was not censoring myself in any way whatsoever. And I've never worked for a publisher that has ever, said one word about any part of the content, whether it was Fantagraphics that initially published it when it was serialized, or Pantheon Books that put out the collection. So there was never any issue about that.
Gotcha. Well, Charles, it was a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Sounds good.
Indisposed, in disguises no one knows, has the face like